this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This is H.B. Kaltenborn speaking. Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern, but no outward sign of panic.
And good evening. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, and you are listening to the Cable Radio Network. Tonight's program is being brought to you and sponsored by The Ufologist, which is a quarterly publication published down in Palatka, Florida. If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, the last 4 weeks, you'll know about The Ufologist. It is published by two folks, Mr. Terry and his wife, Dr. Ann Ecker, who are no relation, but they're great people and they're great publishers, and they have one of the funniest and most insightful publications available today. The Ufologist is a quarterly publication that is published by Northbridge, and make sure you have your pencils, pens, and pieces of paper, because during the course of tonight's program, you are going to want to mark down a lot of information. Also, tonight's show is going to be very unique. We have, and she will not be ready to go on the air for approximately another 10 minutes or so, but a young woman by the name of Simone Mendez, who was in the United States Air Force back at the beginning of the 1980s, and she has a story that is going to knock your socks off, I guarantee it. Think there's no such thing as UFOs? Think they've never been tracked coming in from deep space? And do you think that the Air Force and other government agencies won't go to extraordinary circumstances to keep that under wraps? Well, you're going to want to tune in to tonight's program, because you're going to hear all about it. And during the course of the show, we are going to be running some advertising. One of the things that helps keep UFOs Tonight on the air is advertising and support from you, the listening public, the people that would not let us go off the air a few weeks ago. So what I'm going to ask you is, please support the folks that are taking advertising out on this show, because that makes the whole circle go around. They buy the ad spots that enable UFOs Tonight to remain on the air. You purchase their products that keep them in business so they can continue to buy ad space. And hey, we're one happy family. And speaking of that, here's the first ad. And now I'm going to tell you about the UFO Support Organization. Lord, is that guy long-winded or what? I'm asking you. Hey, my name is Don Ecker. This is UFOs Tonight, and you are listening to the Cable Radio Network. During the course of the evening, if you would like to give us a call, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, that's 1-800. While we're trying to get Simone on the phone, and the reason she wasn't on the phone already is because she was working, and she told me she wouldn't be home until about 10 or 15 minutes after the hour. We're hoping Darren is trying to get her right now. Let me tell you a little bit about exactly what is going on. Okay. Her name is Simone Mendez, and back in 1981, she was suddenly and unwillingly hurled into a situation where not only was she pitted against the United States Air Force and the government all at once, but that this young lady was a loyal, patriotic individual, and her biggest problem was the fact that she had an interest in UFOs. Now, during that period of time, because of the type of duties that Simone was carrying out, she held a top secret clearance. And Darren just told me she is on the line, and let me check in. Good evening, Simone.
Yes.
How you doing?
Hi, fine.
Welcome to UFOs Tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, Simone, I was just giving a very brief rundown about what had happened, but let's go back to the very beginning. Back in 1980, 1981, you enlisted as an airman in the U.S. Air Force.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you were at that time in wing-based telecommunications, is that correct?
Yes.
And you were with the 2069th Communications Squadron at Nellis Air Force Base.
Right.
Now, that's one of the places that many people have suspected for many years that more than just strictly Air Force business goes on down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's right outside of Area 51, is that correct?
Right.
When you were stationed down there, did you ever hear anything about that particular area?
Yeah, I did. I was, as a matter of fact, I was listening to a radio talk show, and I don't know what station it was. It was so long ago. But this was in 82, I think, during my investigation, actually. I was listening to this talk show, and people were on this talk show were talking about the test flying of alien spacecraft out at that area.
In 1982?
And, mm-hmm, yes. I heard this on the radio that I was listening to. And one more item is a tabloid. The Globe tabloid had an article about how some reporters snuck in or around there and saw, I believe they saw, well, it, what appeared to them, otherworldly craft flying around. And, I don't know if I still have a copy of the article, but I was aware of this when I was there. I was hearing bits and pieces of things and in the media, even as early as that time.
Well, Simone, how long did you actually have an interest in unidentified flying objects? From the information that I know and having spoken to you before, and of course your good friend Barry Greenwood, Barry had mentioned in his newsletter, Just Cause, that evidently your interest had gone back a number of years.
My interest only started in 1978. Prior to that, I really wasn't interested in UFOs. I was not knowledgeable about them. When I was a teenager, I had a total disinterest in space-related stuff completely. I mean, it's like I just changed overnight after I had my sighting. Starting in 1978, my brother and I saw some, they were V formations, and they weren't birds. Yeah, I probably don't have time to go into any detail about it, but they looked like the Lubbock lights, and then I saw...
Well, we've got the time if you have the time, Simone.
Okay. And then I saw another formation. I would like to back up and say that I believe that there was a flap going on in that area at that time because...
And where was this at?
I lived in Rockford, Illinois, and I collected local newspaper articles that police officers were seeing and chasing these things in nearby Stockton, Illinois. And then there was a UFO magazine at that time called UFO Update, if anyone remembers that magazine.
I believe I do, yes.
There was an issue, and I used to have a copy of it, and I threw it away after my entanglement with the OSI because I got paranoid about keeping UFO material, so I wish I still had it. But they had a big article in there about people all around this area seeing these things.
Now, this was 1978.
This period was, it started in 78 and it went through till 1980. It was between 78 and 80 that I had these multiple sightings and that I was seeing magazine clippings and newspaper clippings of other people and policemen also seeing and chasing these things, etc. And so I wasn't, the point is that I was not the only one who just started seeing these things all of a sudden like they were singling
and
out.
That basically piqued your interest?
Yeah, I mean, especially when I first saw the V formation, it looked extremely strange and I thought, well, could it be birds, but it looked weird. But then I saw another formation much closer, and it was not a V. They were all in a straight line. There was about 6 to 8 of them. They were flying abreast, and they were round. These were not just lights in the sky like a certain UFO researcher once tried to...
Now, did this sighting, Simone, have anything to do with your decision ultimately to enlist in the Air Force?
Nope. I want to be emphatic. These sightings... After I saw these UFOs, I mean, I looked at a bunch of reading material and tried to find answers, but I kept coming across kind of New Age-oriented material, so I was not exposed heavily to any government cover-up-oriented UFO material, and I was extremely ignorant about government cover-up-related, Air Force-related UFO stuff. I was very ignorant.
Okay, what year and month was it that you enlisted?
February. I remember my paperwork says February 12th, I think, is when I arrived at Lackland Air Force Base boot camp. And my decision to go into the service was, Well, when I was 20 years old, I wasn't getting along with my parents too well, and I had a friend who was kind of a bad influence on me, and I think a lot of kids at that age, they, because of all those factors, and plus I wasn't, Rockford wasn't the place where you get a start off on a good career if you're not educated. It's a blue-collar town.
Well, that's one thing that the service is very good about, is getting a technical education.
And I wanted to leave home, see the world, get in, just like the commercials say, you know, get an education.
It's not a job, it's an adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I did not equate that. As a matter of fact, the career field that they first put me in, when I was dealing with the recruiter, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what kind of job. All I know is that I wanted to just get away and do something different, which I wish I wouldn't have gone in on those premises now. I wish I would have been more planned, but it wasn't. And so the first career field they put me in was, it was called electrical power production. It had nothing to do with, highly
with
classified.
With communications?
This first career field had to do with generators or motor generators or something, and I don't know why I said yes to that. I think the recruiter just gave me it, and I said yes to it, and without even thinking about it.
Well, that's a far jump from receiving, ultimately, a top-secret security clearance.
Here's what happened. When I got to tech school, I went to Shepherd Air Force Base, and this particular career field heavily involved math. Now, I can't tell you. It's a mystery to me. They should have looked at my entrance exam scores, and they would have seen that I am extremely bad with math, and so they put me in something that's just heavily oriented on math, and I don't know how I got by the system. And how.
Well, I want to say real quickly, Simone, to all the listeners, to hang on, because believe me, we're inching toward the good stuff. And while we're doing that, I've got a call for you, Simone. I've got Ron from Ventura. Good evening, Ron.
Good evening.
Did you have a question for my guest or one for me?
No, not really. I just wanted to relate an experience I had about a few years ago.
Okay. Was this having to do with a military experience?
No, a UFO experience.
Okay.
A few years, maybe about 4 years ago, I lived in Yucaipa, California.
Yes, uh-huh.
I just moved here, and I don't know, I feel a little anxious talking about this. I've never really talked about it with too many people. Except my sister and a couple people, but one night I was just reading all alone, you know, and my wife and daughter were sleeping about 10 o'clock at night. Do you know where Yucaipa is? It's in.
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to have to, you know, be rude, but let's speed this up because we have a guest here waiting.
Oh, okay. Well, one night I heard this deep vibration. We have an Air Force base nearby, Norton Air Force Base, and I thought it was the planes warming up. And it came from a certain direction, the sound. I thought, well, it's just the planes warming up. So I went and looked out the window. There was this, like, diamond, like crystal that came out of, there were low-flying, low clouds at night. And it descended from beneath the clouds. It was like a crystal. It was green, red, and white, and it just, it was like a prism, and I didn't know what to make of it. I was so shocked, I didn't know what to make of it. So I watched it, and all of a sudden it would brighten, it would expand, and it would shrink to a point. And then all of a sudden it would rise above the clouds, and there was like a spotlight above the clouds that showed like a round circle above the clouds. And then all of a sudden it silently swished away, like, all the way towards Los Angeles, which was east of there.
Right.
And I was so shocked at it, I couldn't believe it. And I thought, well, I must be tired. You know?
When was this?
This is about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So all of a sudden, you know, I went back to read, and I thought, there must, you know, I couldn't believe it. So then all of a sudden, it's something like telepathic told me, well, I told myself, well, 30 minutes later, I'll go outside and just look again at the skies. But 5 minutes later, something told me, I had a strong feeling, go look out the window. And I went, looked out the window, and there it was again. It was descending below the clouds, and it was vibrating.
Like, well, that area out there, Ron, is been a literal and hotbed of sightings. We've gotten a lot of reports in there. But look, I've got to move along. I've got to get back to my guests. But thank you for your call.
Okay.
Okay, Simone.
Mm-hmm.
So we were.
You
had been to Lackland, then you got to Shepherd, then ultimately.
The math part was too heavy in this first career field. So what happened was, the Air Force. It was their decision to put me in telecommunications, and they gave me... See, I did not pick that career field, you know, so maybe I could find out about UFOs. This was totally fated. It was just totally fated how I fell into this whole situation. And at that time, I did not know. When I was at Shepherd, I didn't know anything about Nellis and Area 51. And then after the Air Force gave me this new career field because the math was too difficult in the previous one, you know, telecommunications, all it is just typing. There's no math. And so that's why they transferred me into that one. And
now, you were responsible for receiving and sending secure, top-secret military information?
Yes.
Was this on a teletype?
Yes, the old UNIVAC-style teletype. In the best comparison is if you read the book, The Falcon and the Snowman, the espionage story about Christopher Boyce, they were the pretty similar, probably similar or the same kind of units that Christopher Boyce worked on in the TRW Black Vault, old UNIVAC teletype.
Okay, now this also necessitated the fact that you had to have a top security clearance.
Yes.
Which is the most stringent security clearance for a military person to achieve, is it not?
Right. I did not even know that I was cleared until after I left that career field when they gave me a debriefing statement to sign, which was the Espionage Act, and I looked at the top of this paper, and it told me what my clearance level was, and it said top secret NATO crypto. So I didn't have just a TS. I had a NATO crypto.
Okay, now, we've got 3 minutes before we go to the half-hour break, and I want to get to the nugget of this story, the beginning of all your problems. Now, you're stationed at Nellis Air Force Base. Nellis Air Force Base is right next to a research development area, one of the most secure in the entire world, right? Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
Area 51 is also the place where many rumors and stories have come out that concerned a purported physicist by the name of Bob Lazar, just to put this in perspective, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it August of 1981?
That's when I arrived at Nellis Air Force Base, August 19. I remember the day exactly.
Okay. You were assigned to the 2069th Communications Squadron at Nellis.
Right. And I wasn't in there for more than, up until October. I think it was October that I was working with this other young airman, if you want me to launch into that, about the airman now who gave me...
Now, the airman that we're going to call Airman Green in order to protect him from,
privacy invasion.
Right, privacy invasion. One morning in October, okay, you're back at your... I guess you had an apartment?
I lived off base in my own little apartment about a quarter of a mile away, and so did he. And he was living with a civilian... female, as a married couple. They weren't really married. He was living with his a civilian girlfriend off base. And
okay, this is October of 1981.
Right.
And you were in, I guess this was in the morning, you were in the shower and you heard somebody beating on your front door.
Right, and it was him. He was in uniform. He looked like he had just gotten off of a shift. And his demeanor and the look on his face and his eyes, I mean, as soon as you look at him, he looked like someone who was scared and nervous and like someone who had just done something wrong that they weren't supposed to, just his eyes, you know. And he was sort of shaking a little bit, too, I thought. And so he took this folded-up piece of paper out of his pocket, and he wanted to show me what he swiped from the work center, snuck out of the work center. And he had no intention of leaving this with me. He just wanted to show me it, and then... I don't know what he was going to do with it from there, but then he wanted to just take it back with him.
No, he had a telecommunications. He had a piece of official Air Force. He had an official Air Force document.
It was a carbon copy. I think there was like about three copies that or came out of the computer, and they had carbons in between. And this looked like the last one because it was mostly faded, but you could still read it.
Now, what did this document say, Simone?
Most of my mind is blanked out, so I'll only say what I can remember.
Well, paraphrase. I mean, we're talking about something 12 years ago, so nobody expects you to remember it exactly.
It seemed to be what you'd call raw intelligence, you know, as it was happening, where our defense, like NORAD and AWACS, were monitoring. They were NORAD somehow picked up it called them a cluster of objects. That's the word it used, cluster.
A cluster of objects.
Right. It didn't say how many, detected them originating from deep space outside the solar system. Those are the words I remember, was deep space outside the solar system.
So they could pick up something with their equipment at NORAD that would literally go beyond the solar system? Is this what you recall?
I'm just saying what I remember the paper said. Now, I know, I found out years and years later that NORAD does have what they call a deep space unit, and that's Barry Greenwood told me that NORAD has a deep space unit. I didn't know this till years and years later. But one of the words they said in the document was deep space.
Okay, now, so NORAD was notifying Nellis Air Force Base that they had picked up a cluster of objects.
Yeah, and when these things came in, they were coming towards the Earth, and when they went into the atmosphere, they went right into the Soviet Union. And then it said something about the AWACS was monitoring them while they were in the Soviet Union, and
they were hovering over Moscow.
The area of Moscow. Then a couple of them, I can't remember how many, two or three, I don't know, because I'm kind of nervous here, but broke off from the group. And these ones, according to the document, they proceeded to orbit the Earth at about I can't remember. It was something like 25 Mach, or, you know, 2500, something with 2 and 5 in the word Mach.
25 Mach. Okay, Simone, take a deep breath. You're doing great. Believe me, there's no reason to be nervous. We're going to have to take our half-hour break, and when we come back, some more of this fantastic story. And I'm telling you, it gets better. So hold on.
Okay.
We are back. Okay, let's get back to the radio here. If during the course of this broadcast, if you have any questions or you'd like to call in, perhaps you even have some information about some of these cases that we talk about on a weekly basis that you may be perhaps able to help solve. Regardless, you can call us here if you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. That's a free toll call. And if on the off chance, however, you're trying to call in on the 800 number, you can't get through, you can still reach us by calling 818-352. We have a number of lines here, and the calls will roll over. Okay, Simone, now, when you looked at this telex that this fellow had brought over, now, did he realize that he was, in fact, breaking Air Force regulations?
I have no doubt about that.
What caused him to bring it to you?
Because when we were working together, some of the material we saw, you couldn't help for the subject of UFOs to come up, because a lot of the material we saw dealt with space-related matters, such as satellite tracking and so forth, and so you couldn't help for the subject to come up sooner or later. So one day we got to talking about UFOs, and we became, you know, developed a friendship, a work-related friendship. Where you become buddies with someone at work, and you get to talking about your lives and so forth. And I told him about my own sightings back home, and then he told me that he also had some kind of close encounter with his friends when they were driving. And so we both had this interest, it turned out, and if he wasn't lying to me, that is, I don't know. But so he knew this about me. And I know that people are going to immediately think, well, that you were being set up. Yeah, he was setting you up to, because they figured you were a security risk because you talk about UFOs.
That thought cross your mind that you were being set up?
Not at that time. It didn't. I was very naive and inexperienced with people out in the world at that time, and it didn't cross my mind. But
Well, before this happened, did you ever have any briefings or anything, or any of your superiors ever mention anything that could be construed as an unidentified flying object briefing?
No, not at all.
But you said some of your duties included space-based communications and so forth. Nothing this blatant ever happened before?
There was let me see, how can I say this? There was some things that came up, but I can't, I don't want to be specific because I'd get in trouble. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so,
in other words, it's something that still would be considered classified.
Yeah, see, because what people don't know who are listening is that this document later during the investigation was declared a hoax, but we'll get into that, even though they behaved like it was not a hoax. I should get into more of the detail if you want me to go on about...
Oh, absolutely. Now, he brought this over, he gave it to you, and then he was getting ready to leave. Did he take it with him?
I didn't want him to. I latched onto it. And the reason I latched onto it is because I became overwhelmed. I became emotionally overwhelmed because I sort of got ridiculed when I was seeing these things back home as a civilian. I was hit with the harsh reality that hey, the world thinks you're a cuckoo if you bring this up, and that affected me. And so when I had this in my hand, I thought I have this proof. And this is proof once and for all that people should not be made fun of who report these things. And all the briefings and everything that they drilled into me just went out the window. It was temporary insanity or what. I don't want to criminate myself in that way, but I became so overwhelmed with this that everything just went out the window for me. And the only thing I had on my mind was I want to hang on to this, but another reason I want to say this is very important. Another reason that it was easy for me to keep this thing is because he told me. Now at the time I believed him. He told me that he processed it so that the situation would look like it had been processed and destroyed because the addressee gets theirs and then you destroy the extra ones.
Well, I was going to ask if there was a record of that carbon copy, if somebody would start to track it down.
He told me that he took care of all that and he didn't go into any detail. So he said, because the first thing I thought of too was, you know, this thing is going to be missed immediately and we're going to get nailed. And he said, don't worry about it. I took care of it so that it won't be missed. And I believed him, and I didn't ask him to go into any detail about how he did that, which was fatal. That was a fatal mistake on my part.
Well, actually, by regulation, you should have, by military regulation, you should have reported him.
I know that. Yes. If that happened to me this day, being older and more mature, I would have done everything in the proper way. But at that time, at that age in my life, I don't know. I don't know how, when you're young, you can explain when you're looking back, you know.
Well, how long did you hold on to that carbon copy of that message?
I had that thing for quite a while. Let's see, from October, November, December, about three and a half months, I would say, because then the big investigation got underway, let's see, January.
How did that happen?
Okay. It gets kind of complicated. I'll try and be...
Well, I'll tell you what. Get your thoughts collected. We're going to have to take another break, and when we come back from this break, we'll go right into it, okay?
All right.
Okay, Simone. Hey, we are back, and also, incidentally, speaking of Yvonne, on July the 10th, Saturday, July the 10th, 1993, and we are back with my guest, Ms. Simone Mendez, who is a former member of the United States Air Force, and a former communication specialist that held a top security clearance and somehow, through a matter of chance and circumstance, got herself involved in a tremendously complicated government investigation over a telex involving UFOs being tracked from deep space back in 1981. If you have a question for my guest or for myself, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area code, and we are back with my guest, Simone. Okay, Simone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We were down there about...
About how this thing got into the government's hands and... the Airman Green's girlfriend that he was living with, he also made a fatal mistake of showing her this document. Later, I found out much later on from her that I think he showed it to her before he even showed it to me. And he made a fatal mistake of doing that because later on, as often happens with couples, those two got into it and he threw her out. And so I can't say this for a fact. I think this is what happened, is that she wanted revenge, so she went to the Air Force Office of Special...
Aha, beware the woman scorned,
The woman scorned.
I see.
She went to the OSI, and I think she told him everything she knew.
OSI, which, of course, is the Office of Special Investigations.
Uh-huh. And...
So she went in there and ratted him off.
Right. Now, at that time, she didn't... I don't think she knew... She didn't mean to... I don't think she knew what she was going to drag me into, you know. But it... So she came to me. This is the details of this are hard to remember, so I'm going to just say what I do remember is that she came to me one day and told me that she told me what she did, and the OSI, I think they told her to tell me that the document was a hoax, it was fake. And so I believed her, you know, and I was devastated.
No, the OSI told this young lady that this document was hoaxed.
Yeah, and that we don't have any need to worry about it and all that. And I was experiencing two emotions. I was devastated and I was relieved at the same time.
Did you believe that at the time?
I did because nothing weird was happening, like people looking for missing messages or nothing. And you know, I figured, well, such a long time went by that, well, maybe it was really a hoax because I didn't get in any trouble and such a long time went by. And you know, either he processed it properly or it was a hoax, because either way, a long time went by and I didn't get any trouble. So I figured, well, most likely another reason I kind of believed her is because we found out much later on that about his character and his personality. He was he stole things and he was dishonest, and he was the kind of guy that would pull a mean hoax on you like this, but he was also the kind of guy who really would steal real classified information.
And he held a top security clearance?
Yep, and I don't know how he got it. I can't explain that. And it's just terribly unfortunate that...
Okay, well, after his former girlfriend went in and reported him to the OSI, the Air Force Investigative Service, they called him in?
From that point, what...
How did you end up in the middle of this? This is
okay.
What I want to know.
All right. I took the document into work with me, and I showed it to somebody that I had talked to on the job and knew had worked there much longer and had more experience. You know, now that was probably not a smart thing to do, but I wasn't a real bright kid. I'll admit that right now. I wasn't. So, and I showed it to this person and I said, you know, is this paper real? Now, here's where it gets peculiar. This supervisor in particular took one glance. They did
not... Was this an NCO? Was this a sergeant?
They were either either like a senior airman or a sergeant, somewhere around that rank.
Okay.
And they didn't even study or read the document or act surprised. It's as if it was rehearsed. It's as if their reaction was rehearsed, because they just glanced at it for a second and said, yeah, just throw it away. Yeah, you know. So, and I thought, wow, you know, this person's really really sharp. They don't even have to read it. Just look at it and, you know. So, okay, well, I threw it in the classified waste, which is to be shredded. And I figured, well, that's the end of that matter. I guess I don't have to worry about anything, and little did I know what I was in for.
Okay, but what happened then?
Sometime later on, I had to go over to the OSI building. And when I arrived in the OSI building, they had an FBI agent from downtown waiting for me. And I knew right away that this thing was going to blow up in my face instead of go away.
Why FBI instead of military security or intelligence?
Because they turned this into an espionage case. The FBI agent flashed his ID at me, and then he held up a... This is what I remember, is he held up some kind of like brown envelope or something and opened it up, and here was that very document. I don't know how it got from there to him. I don't know, you know. And he said... And as soon as he showed me it, I started crying, you know. I felt like I got hit by a truck because I knew what I was going to be in for. And so they took me into this small interrogation room, and it had an air conditioner and no windows and just a desk and two chairs. And it was me and him and another OSI agent. And then they proceeded to interrogate me for several hours.
Did they read you your rights?
Yeah, they did read me my rights, but... See, at that time, I had this attitude where, this is the attitude I had. I'm innocent of any real wrongdoing, and you know, in my heart, and I'm gonna do whatever these guys want, and I don't need a lawyer because I know that I'm in the right, and that was my attitude at the time, and so I'm gonna do whatever they want because they're good guys, and they're gonna find out who the bad person is, and you know, this will all be resolved. That's what I had assumed in my mind. And remember that word assume, never, when
right.
You know what happens when you do that?
Yes.
And so that's what happened.
Now, you at this time, Simone, you had not seen nor spoken to Airman Green?
No. From this point on, my contact with him was...
Can you hold on 1 second, Simone?
Okay.
I just, let's see here. Live UFO sighting. Okay, let me go to the phones. This is Don. Hello.
Yeah, Don, it's Dave Aaron. I have Marilyn on the other line from Temecula. Marilyn, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Yes. Mr. Ecker.
Yes.
This is Marilyn in Temecula, which is between Lake Elsinore and San Diego.
Well, good evening.
Good evening. In the southwesterly sky, there are two stars parallel to each other. When you look up there, they look like they're possibly, you know, if you want to say inches, an inch and a half apart. They have been there for the past hour. They've never been in that sky before, which I'm very aware what's up there. The Big Dipper is to the right of it. Venus is to the left of it. And these two stars, I went out and parked my car so I could see it where people wouldn't think I was odd standing in the middle of the road. And the star on the left started raising up above the one on the right. Now they're back together again. Now, a few months ago, actually it was December 11th.
Have you called anyone, Marilyn?
Yes, she called me, Don. This is Dave Aaron at the UFO Clearing.
Right, but I mean, have you called any of the airports around there to find out if these things may be on radar?
No, I have not. It's very strange, though. We did have a helicopter circling right next door here with her spot on, and I thought, well, maybe they're just trying to, you know, gather our attention over there instead of looking up to see what's in the sky. This helicopter circled for a good hour till it finally went away, but I, you know, I can't say anything about that. No, I haven't called anyone other than a friend in Lake Elsinore who has spotted them also, and I had a witness with me when it looked like it moved, the one on the left moved up above the one on the right. And they just sit there. But December 11th, 1992, when I went shopping in the market, there were two gigantic lights across the street, approximately 100 feet into the sky from the ground. And I called one of the box girls over and asked her to take a look at what I was looking at. And it frightened her, but it was two lights that were across from each other, which was horizontal. We sat there, or she stood there, I sat in my car for about 3 to 5 minutes. Then all of a sudden, the light on the right went directly above the one on the left, and then it took off, veered off into the distance.
Why don't you tell Don and the listeners the city you live in, Marilyn?
I did, in Temecula. I said between Lake Elsinore and San Diego.
Okay, Marilyn, now what you want to do is take down as much pertinent information as you can. These objects, the direction of the sky that they're in, an approximate degree above the horizon, what the atmospheric conditions are,
mm-hmm.
And if you see any other air traffic you know, in the area.
Yes.
You want to, one of the things that, that it's very important, if you can find out from the FAA or any local airports around there, if these things may be tracked on radar. I know myself, I've been out in that area in the desert.
Don, can I interrupt you for a quick second here?
Well, yeah, just...
I'm going to go on my portable phone and go outside, maybe give you a live report if I can see these, and you go ahead and talk to me, and I'll let you know when I'm back on the portable, okay?
Okay. And we remember, we have a live show going on here. I have a young woman on by the name of Simone Mendez, who was a member of the United States Air Force. She held a top security clearance in communications, and we were discussing her trials and tribulations after she was exposed to a official Air Force telex that had described tracking UFOs in from deep space. Have you heard that part of the show, Marilyn?
No, well, I cannot get you. Now, are you on the radio or are you on the cable television now?
Okay, we are on the cable radio network, which is carried on satellite and mostly over cable televisions. CRN is available on satellite. And, you know, there are a number of ways you can get it, including AM and FM stations, if we have them hooked in to the net, which right now that's something that we are working on.
Right. All right. I've had quite a few sightings now, and this one happened tonight. That was the only reason I called, but I have had other ones. And just last week I had one, and I verified the spot I was in just to make sure that's exactly what I was looking at. So I can talk to you another time, Mr. Ecker, and I appreciate you letting my story go over. And I hope we can get to the bottom of this one. And this lady sounds very interesting. I wish I had her on my line.
Well, I'm sure Dave can get you fixed up.
Well, I know your listeners are going to think I'm nuts, but my portable phone has vanished. It always stands up there on the recharger, and it's just not there.
Okay.
What can I tell you?
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, you keep hunting for it, and we are going to move along now. I have Simone Mendez on.
Well, we wanted to give you this scoop because it was going on right now.
I appreciate it, and let me know if you find anything else out about that.
Well, if you don't hear from me next week, you know I vanish too.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, Simone, those are the type of things that happen, you know, that happen occasionally. We're moving along, and suddenly something comes in out of left field.
Yeah.
And we are, I'll tell you what, we are right now at the top of the hour where we're going to have to take a break. You can stay with us, can't you?
Right.
Okay, super. Then when we come back, more of this fantastic story and then what is happening today. So hang in there, you all, and keep your eyes to the skies. We'll be back in just a moment.
CRN, the cable radio network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object to any topics or views discussed in the program.